Coart. Lynn.
Here.
Hodson.
Here.
Palinkas.
Here.
Emmanuel.
Here. Okay. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
I so should.
Second. Oh, did you want to make an adjustment?
Now we want to make an adjustment, right?
Yes. So we're going to remove the approval, item number 7, approval of healthcare services group contract for dietary management services.
And put it on for another month.
So do you want to move it as an amendment, or do you want me to move it as a?
Did it move?
Change your motion, approve the agenda with deleting.
Removal of the item number 7.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Anybody opposed? All right. About the minutes, are there any changes to the minutes? Not a motion to approve.
You've had a chance to look at them. I'm going to make a motion to approve the minutes as they are.
Mary, you second it?
Yes, I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Okay, public participation.
I guess it's my turn again. I've been here for since the 14th of March in 2014. We finally attained a level of comfort with the nursing home and the way things worked and how the people took care of my wife and the other people here. And I thought things were going along pretty good. And I find I'm back in a position of discomfort when I leave, especially if I wanted to go someplace for 3 or 4 days. One of the things that I've had happen, I've had several calls at 2:30 in the morning or night, and kind of hard to deal with when the person that you're talking to cannot communicate to you in a manner that you can understand what's going on. And then you find it, for example, I think Sue has taken 2 ambulance rides to Carl Emergency that were not necessary. The third one came up about 10 weeks ago, 9 weeks ago. And I talked to the person, and I said, what was the problem? And they related the issue to me, and I said, well, it sounded like she hadn't done so-and-so during the day. I said, why don't you see if you can get her to drink a glass of water or something and observe her for an hour? Call me back. Call me back in an hour. Everything was fine. We haven't had any incidents since, but that level of discomfort is something that I thought we had behind us, and that's increased now that we've had I just don't think 4 and 5 was running like it was before, and I don't have the confidence in it running the way it really ought to be. Now, again, you're entitled to my opinions and how I feel about it. And there you go. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public participation? Okay. Communications. Did somebody attend the family advisory
conference? I did.
What are you doing?
I thought very positive meeting. Maybe Mr. Wicker can't talk now, but there seemed to be a lot of compliments about the nursing care, and nobody really said too much about the food. Maybe that's because they've said it all before, and you know, didn't have anything to add. But there were just quite a few positive comments about the nursing care.
And was it fairly well attended?
No, I wouldn't say so. Probably maybe 5 family members,
Well, we did not, we didn't get minutes this time, right? I mean, you're,
yeah, I haven't seen them either. Doris has been out.
Okay.
I cannot attend the next meeting, so I'm hoping that, I was hoping Sam could.
When is the next one again?
The third Tuesday, so I didn't have to look at today.
It'd be next week, yeah.
Yeah, so the 16th.
Why don't you say, Sam, and see if you can make it?
And it's at six. Okay, so you're gonna see if Sam can go?
I don't care. Do you remember anything specifically that?
No, there was a lot of positive that came out of it.
That's why I called it.
Okay, any other communications? Okay, all right, we're not gonna do the approval of the healthcare services group. On the action plan update.
All right, we skipped seven, so we're gonna.
Yep, right. We'll go to the action plan update. And kind of said, we wanna only talk about, you know, things that you have something different on, something that is either an issue, problem, or something that we've had some change or significant improvement on. Things that you can kind of touch on or not.
Yep, so on page eight, and this follows up one of the follow-up items from last month, which is to talk about the separations. So page eight is HR dashboard. So if, what was in the management report did not reflect any new data. So what I just handed out to you, the HR dashboard includes updated retention and turnover rate and separation statistics for the month of April 2015. So
a little bit better.
So a little bit better. So the retention rate actually overall actually went up from March to April, but and all nursing also went up, but CNAs actually dropped by a couple of percentage points. So that basically means we had something drop off at the tail end or the front. The turnover rate, you can see, has improved for CNAs by 3 percentage points. All nursing is up. And the overall turnover rate for all employees or all separations is up to 60.6%. The next table below that is the separation statistics, and if you it also includes the updated actual numbers for the 12-month period of April 2014 to April 2015. And so if you take a look at just on the CNAs, and it's clearly the areas in the 6 month employees that have been at the facility for less than 6 months. So the number of CNA separations for the rolling 12-month period in January was 19. The total number increased to 22 in February, 24 in March, and 26 in April. And again, food service workers also showed an uptick, 21 in January, down to 19 in February, 23 for that 12-month period through March, and then 23 again in April. So not quite the increase that we've seen with the CNAs. So the second sheet that I just handed out, because one of the follow-up items was to get better detail on what's going on with the separation. So I put these statistics together for a 4 month period from February of this year to May of this year. So you've got three tables. The top one is all the separations and the reasons for those separations. Then you have just dietary employee separations, and they were all food service workers, and then CNA separations. And again, even if there was a zero, I put the reasons, so they're similar for all three tables. So you could see with, let's start with the CNAs, you know. And again, there's really no real pattern going here, except if you take a look at what increased in March and April were terminations due to performance. And so we had two of those in March, three of those in April. We didn't have any in May, but in May, we had two CNAs that were no call, no shows, so those are terminations. We had one retirement, and we had two separations that were family issues. I think one of the CNAs was graduating from nursing school. So, I mean, there's good reasons for the separation. So, and you can see they're kind of all over the place, and there's no real pattern. But there is, I would say there's a question mark for any no-call, no-shows to say, you know, what's the reason? Was it just that they were poor attendance, or were there specific reasons that they decided not to come back to work? They may have been unhappy at work, we just didn't know about it. Same thing for no reasons on any of these, you know. Those are individuals that we could not contact, so we don't know the reasons why they separated, and was there anything that is something that we could have done something about. So again, if you take a look at some items that could be something that we could work on, and that would be whether they separated from work environment or poor management. You can see in the top table in March, there were two separations in that category. One of those was in dietary, and that was for poor management, and a CNA separated in March for work environment. And, so those are two potential separations that maybe we could have done a better job from a management standpoint to prevent those from happening. But without question, you know, maybe we can't do anything about retirements or, you know, CNAs that have decided to become nurses, whatever the case is, or they want to spend more time with their families, or if they moved out of town. But the number of separations is still high, so, you know, we are looking at areas such as orientation. You know, do we need to do a better job of orientation? And one of the things that Karen's been working on is trying to communicate with the orientees during orientation, whether it's on the daily, at the very least a weekly basis, on how they're doing. Are there any concerns that the orientee has? Does the preceptor have any issues that they have identified? So that we can try to be more proactive in addressing any potential issues that we as a home or a management team have control over. And so again, we'll just have to see how it progresses. Now, a positive note is the dietary separations in May were zero. Bad note, CNA separations were higher in May, but again, majority of those were reasons out of our control, except for the no-call, no-show, that we decided to back off from that. But we had two that were family-related issues that were very personal reasons for separating. Any questions on any statistics?
I got no call, no show, those automatic terminations.
We count them as resignations. They're counted as a resignation.
Why don't you call them in and counsel them and put them on probation rather than resignations?
Most of the time, these people we can't contact. We try to, before we do anything with them, we try to contact them.
Yeah, I think this shows a lack of interest. I think what you're saying is
right.
They really don't want to talk to you. They don't want to come in.
Right.
That's their way of saying, I quit.
I mean, sometimes you can, when you call them on the carpet and talk to them about it, they turn around on it. But if they're wanting a job, if they don't want a job, that's another thing. So, and just to be an old automatic separation.
But we do reach out to them. But most of the time, I'd say almost 100% of the time, they don't return our calls.
They don't want to come back.
Yeah.
Right. But, yeah, it's their way of saying, I quit, I guess.
Right, exactly. I would make two comments. The first one is sometimes when you can't get the day off that you need off or want off, then you just don't go back. But more importantly, isn't it in the union, specified in the union contract that, what is it, 2 days no call,
mm-hmm.
no show, you're
right.
considered to have resigned.
Right.
So in order for them to change that, they might have to change their union language. Now, one thing you can do is, on the first day a person's no call, no show, is, as you say, call them up right away. Don't wait till that
right.
second day. You know.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
if you wanted to intervene, you'd have to do it before the second day
right.
because at that point your hands would be tied.
Yeah, if you go into the second day, you might as well scratch them. You know,
right.
I agree
right.
there.
Yeah, they're calling. I mean, as soon as
if
the shift starts.
Yeah, because you really don't know that they might be at home incapacitated, right?
Right.
I mean, you really really don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Where do things stand with the HR director?
We have one interview in place, and it's actually a candidate that we're potentially looking at for possibility of being the dual role of HR plus maybe the business office manager position. Someone who has those qualifications. Again, just looking into it at this point, but I've talked with him. Gary Winchell, our finance director at MPA, has also talked to him, and Karen's next in line to talk with the gentleman.
This is one of our key initiatives on that action item. Okay. Other action items you want to talk about?
Yeah, so on page 10, there's the updated CMS direct care staffing hours.
So much better than the final work update.
Right, so the changes to the nurse aides. So what we reported is in the first section under reported hours per resident per day. So the corrected hours increased from 1.96 per resident per day to, is it
2.63? 2.63, yeah.
So when you go across, so the adjusted hours per resident day take into account the acuity or how complex our residents are. So the number actually gets adjusted up to 2.74. But again, you can see that with the adjusted numbers, our CNA hours per resident per day are significantly higher compared to our competitors and also the Illinois state average. So again, also our overall adjusted hours per resident day increased from 3.19 to 3.89 on the adjusted hours per resident per day.
Also the highest of anybody of our competitors.
Right. So, and I believe that, you know, again, these numbers will be updated when we are have our annual survey, and we are in a survey window, and with the additional nursing management hours that we have in place, we should see an increase in our RN hours per resident per day. So, you know, I'm not gonna make any guarantees, but we have the potential to see an increase. I don't know if it's going to be enough to increase our star rating, but again, the new methodology puts more weight to RNs, and we do have more RNs on board now than we did last year, so we may be able to see the staffing numbers go up. The calculation is complex, so I can't tell you for sure whether that's going to happen or not.
The RNs is the only one where we still look a little low. Hours per patient day than any other facility in our area. And yet, put aides, LPNs, and RNs all together. So it's that number 3.89 based on acuity. We've got 3.89 adjusted hours per resident per day. And none of the other ones that we are looking at here, the one that I can't see on here.
Yeah, and the adjusted hours theoretically means that now you have an apples-to-apples comparison in the hours per day with the other facilities. So again, just for a frame of reference, you know, our numbers based on acuity went up from 3.72 to 3.89. That means that we have a higher acuity of residents. I think the only facility that saw a decrease was Heartland and Paxton. So their total nursing hours per resident day unadjusted was 3.75, and it went down to 3.47 after adjusting for acuity. So that means that their acuity level compared to ours is less. We need to take away from that. Let's see, on page 14, this is the nursing home compare summary for the facilities in our area. And I just want to point out that we have previously talked about the changes to Champaign, to our nursing home, but Heartland of Paxton, Heartland of Champaign, Country Health, and Clark Lindsay had some changes. And I can tell you that Heartland of Paxton's overall rating did not change, but their health inspection rating actually went up from 1 star to 2 stars. Heartland of Champaign overall went from 1 star to 2 stars, and it was because their quality measure rating went from 4 stars to 5 stars. Country Health dropped from being an overall four-star facility to a three-star facility, and they saw their health inspection drop from four stars to three stars. Their staffing actually went up from two stars to three stars, but their quality measures also decreased from four stars to three stars. In Park Lindsay, they're already getting changed, but they're, I'm not sure exactly what happened, but their staffing rating went from five stars to no data available. It says not enough data to calculate, so I'm not exactly sure what happened there, but but the rest of the facilities, CUNR, Helia, and Illini did not have any changes or updates to their five-star ratings.
Okay, so I had a little trouble when I was looking at this. There's two columns for Champaign County Nursing Home.
I know, because I put the
old
rating.
This is the old one, this is the new one, okay.
Yeah.
Everybody else see that? And then the only change for us is staffing for two to three.
Yes.
When does the window start on the next survey?
We are in the window.
The middle of June.
Yeah.
June to what, December?
Well, our typical survey is November, December, January, but we had an out of order survey last year. They came in September, so.
Hope we're ready.
Yeah.
Right.
We've been diligently working on trying to get prepared. Any questions or comments on the Pinnacle survey? I could point out that for the dining scores in April went up. Dining service was 3.46, up from 3.09 in March. Quality of food increased from 3.04 to 3.35. As you can see, overall satisfaction in the first table, the chart was down in April.
Do you have an observation about food? Do you have an observation about food?
Well, other than like yesterday, there wasn't enough people there serving. There was three in that dining room. One, there was only two there for a long time serving food. That part hasn't changed any.
Is there some other part that has?
Hmm?
Is there some other part that has changed some, or no?
No, it's not changing. I mean, they're right back to like they were before, one at a time, clear across the room. They go to this spot, next time they go clear the other way, and then they're back. I mean, it's a lot of waste energy. They got the carts in the corners, instead of putting them in the middle of the room, where they can go both ways. They stick a clear over in one corner, so they're running clear across, back and forth the room, trying to do it. Two girls trying to serve out of two carts. Finally, the third one showed up about halfway through the meal. I don't know whether they were short help yesterday, Karen, or what was going on, but it's such a simple thing that could be fixed, but they start to fix it 2 weeks later, it's right back where it was at. There's no reason for some of this stuff not to change. They just keep doing it the same old way. They're not changing the thing and the way they deliver this stuff. And yesterday, some people had some meals that were cold by the time they got them, so they took them back and stuck in the microwave again, you know. And it's just, the delay is just, time factor is unbelievable.
What's the management response?
It takes 30 to 45 minutes to serve the meal. And that's way beyond the limit of those food containers.
So the focus is on getting, obviously, this consistency, but it's, I think what we're identifying is there's it's a employee performance issue, and so the inconsistencies develop with certain individuals. And so it's basically an issue of getting the supervision to all the employees at the right level and making sure that we're doing everything and pointing out and doing corrective action for those employees that are not performing. Because it's issues like, making sure that the plate warmers are warm before you put them under the plates. And we have seen when we've spot checked, when I've been there spot checked in some cases, some of them, when only put one plate warmer on the warmer. Sometimes we'll put two, one on top of each other, and it doesn't work that way. Both of them won't heat up, the one on the bottom will heat up, the one on the top one. So it's things like that, that, you know, certain employees will think that they can do things a little bit quicker by doing it, but it doesn't work that way. So I mean,
can you take his comments back there to dietary and say, here's what we observed and what are we doing about it?
We have.
That's the thing, it's not changing. I mean, we sat here and talked about it for months and it hasn't changed. And there was one girl up here a couple weeks ago, she's a tall slender girl. She was just running her wheels off, doing a great job. And I complimented her and I said, you're doing a super good job. She said, well, we're shorthanded, you know. So she was doubling her duty. She was actually running back and forth trying to get them delivered. But yesterday, the one girl, she was doing a good job. And the two was there were doing a good job, but I don't know where the rest of them were. And the CNAs down at the desk, I mean, they were shoving people down to the meals, you know, and stuff, trying to help feed them. They were doing their thing, but the delivering of the trays is broke. I mean, it's still broke.
Karen, what's that? His one thought that seems so simple is the location of the carts being sort of not in an optimal location. Is there any way to physically change that part of the operation?
We would have to move tables. I mean, there's no way to maneuver those carts. And the dining rooms are pretty full right now with tables and people.
Yeah, you can rearrange it.
Right, we would have to
get the carts into the middle or a closer area so them girls don't have to walk their legs on running back and forth across the room, you know.
Something we can explore with them.
I think that, you know, looking at some options is a good idea, but I think taking back the basic comment
the biggest problem is no shows on the weekends. And I'm sure during the week it's a different story. They do a decent job. But basically on the weekends it's very scarce. I know one weekend I asked the girls, I said, how many are you supposed to have here? And she said 7. I said, how many you got here? She said 4. So there's 3 missing. You know, that's almost 50% of the workforce. And I don't know where you've ever checked in to maybe get hiring high school kids in here at minimum wages on the weekends. I know the assisted living places do it all the time. And gives a kid a job, but you're not paying any benefits or anything. You're just paying a minimum wage. And at least bring a couple in at each dining room on the weekends to help serve the food.
Well, in this last orientation class last week, we had three dietary aides and a new cook / chef. So,
but we lost the one high school because of a pre-employment issue.
But the number of applications and I mean over the last 3 months, we're getting more than enough applications. It's just, you know, with the vetting process, everything's being expedited as quickly as possible. But again, there are things out of our control. I mean, we had, you know, someone that ended up, you know, with our vetting, you know, didn't pass one of our tests. And I don't want to go into detail what it is, but, you know, and it's something that is kind of out of our control. So, I mean, with all our testing from, you know, drug testing, physicals and everything, you know, we're doing everything we can to make sure we hire a high quality employee. And some of those processes, I know that some of the other facilities don't do. I mean, we do drug testing, other facilities don't do drug testing. And we do have applicants that fail the drug tests. I mean, I can honestly say, you know, at all our facilities, and I can give you at Monroe County, we had a guy that failed the drug test, tested positive for marijuana, and his reasoning was, well, I hadn't smoked since last week, so I thought I'd be okay. So that didn't come in all the night. So, you know.
So, Karen, are there barriers to, I like the idea of hiring beginner workers, high school students. Is there a barrier to that contract issue or?
They would have to be
union
employees. I mean, we can't bring them in at minimum wage.
We can't.
No.
Yes, where your system living's got advantages.
Right. And we do have a couple of kids coming through the summer youth employment this summer, and they've actually chosen food service to work in. So have some of those kids for several weeks.
So you might talk to the union and see if they would, some way you could work out something like that.
Well, I don't think there's any barriers, but I think to date, you know, we've had enough applications that we really didn't have to go that route, but you know, maybe we'll get a higher quality employee out of these 18-year-old high school kids. So I think it's something we'll take a look at.
It's a pool that we haven't really explored very aggressively, and I really don't know. I'm thinking there are probably some high school students who actually are looking for employment on a weekend, because it looks like our big problem is that the no-show on the weekend, and that's when your staffing is predictable, it appears to be a problem, and having a few sort of helper types that sort of augment the weekend workforce at relatively low cost might be an idea.
And we have put our feelers out to the schools. We just haven't. We've had one applicant.
Yeah.
Huh. I think you bring up a good point. I mean, during the summer, I think there's probably more.
Yeah, but that's also when your regular employees are probably eager to and have probably pressed you as hard as you can for vacation time. You've probably stretched to accommodate the maximum number of vacation requests from your employees, which means that one call-in becomes, you know, goes, you know, it's suddenly the molehill has become a mountain, but something to think about, especially.
Once you start doing that, though, the word passes between
right.
the students,
yeah.
because I got two granddaughters that worked at the one out in Mohammed, assisted living, they worked there 2.5 years.
And I think
on weekends.
Some of the other things that we're looking at, not just with food service, but especially with the CNAs and with nurses, I mean, with all those positions, the weekends it's always problematic. And so we're also starting to look at, you know, weekend options, you know, to entice people, you know, what who are willing to work the weekends, and what can we do?
Okay.
The same issues with the CNAs. So, but I think you bring up a good point with the high school kids. So.
I have two questions. Are you saying that you don't have any high school kids that are working that evening shift during the week?
None.
No. We just recently actually offered one, but we lost it.
And remind me what that, it used to be 4 to 7, but it's changed. It's still 4 to 7. Because many years ago, that was entirely staffed by high school kids.
Yeah, no.
And my second question is your manager on duty required to be in the dining rooms on the weekend?
There are two managers here every weekend. And depending on how the day, he was probably talking about one of the managers, the tall Liz, is one of healthcare services group. She works.
No, I'm not talking about the food service managers.
The manager on duty, yes. The manager on duty, yes.
They're required to be in the dining room.
Right.
One of the two dining rooms.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay.
So you've got a suggestion on looking at what you can do on weekends, and including whether or not there's something to be done with trying to move through high schoolers.
Mm-hmm. Okay, page 24. What I want to point out there is outpatient rehab program. So we are actively been working with Health Pro over the last few weeks with their health care and has submitted the licensure documents to IDPH. They actually showed up. Sooner than expected, and we don't have any equipment in there, so they'll have to come back. We have a list of equipment that has been requested by Health Pro, and we're in the process of pricing those out. We also have, there's going to be very minimal renovations needed in that area. It's in the old child care area up at the front of the building. And the main changes is it was originally built to be a daycare center for kids, and so we have to change the toilets out from small to adults.
That's been done. Yeah. So what would you say is your new date for starting?
August is what they told me.
August
1st.
Okay.
There's very little. We have to put up a couple exit signs, place a couple fire extinguishers, so it's really simple.
And then we're going to start offering outpatient. Yeah.
Great.
And again, the focus will be on identifying any of our adult daycare residents who need rehab services, but the other potential is discharge patients who need additional rehab. So it's a double benefit potentially. We can get outpatient services from our existing clientele. Now this is we're kind of shooting ourselves in the foot, but in the overall picture, the hospitals and the health plans are looking for us to decrease our Medicare length of stay. So we can discharge them and still provide outpatient therapy, it actually becomes a win-win, because they'll be more apt to send us more Medicare business because we have the ability to provide outpatient therapy. The adult daycare residents, the VA, and again, Molina and Health Alliance, have all three have voiced significant interest in providing those services to adult daycare programs. So we could see an increase in adult daycare program clientele, which hopefully over time will lead to more referrals to the inpatient side. And eventually, you know, not only to our existing residents, but we can offer outpatient therapy to any seniors out in the community. So that
for
is
the
a
residents
long-term goal.
Here who get discharged, they get added consistency and continuity
right.
of care. I think that's a big deal.
Exactly. So
don't have to switch to therapists, you've got the same regime, somebody can see whether or not you're progressing.
Yep.
That's great. Okay.
Let's see, man. That's it. Unless anyone else has any other questions.
Finances.
So finances. So in April, we showed a net loss, and again, that is due to the fact that we had 1,998 conversion days. So that resulted in a net loss of conversion of $79,920 in revenue from private pay to Medicaid. Census, again, so far in the first quarter into April has been lower than anticipated. In April we were at 195.4. In May we increased to 198.1. I can tell you today our census is 204. Medicare was at 10.7 for an average in May. Today I think, are we at 15?
Yeah.
Plus one VA rehab mm-hmm. resident that we had. So I can tell you, again, the number of inquiries, like I've continued to say, is very, very solid. You know, over the last week or so, Josh has been very busy with inquiries and admission. So a couple of things that are going on in the marketplace that will help us is that I can tell you that CUNR and Helia have lost their Health Alliance managed care contract. Dual managed care contract. I mean, we have no reason of why that happened, but those are two, you know, CUNR was a big Medicaid player in the marketplace, and, you know, if they don't have a Health Alliance dual eligible contract, that can only mean good things for us. So,
the payer quality and the Health Alliance is better than Medicaid. Almost anything's got to be better than Medicaid. But
our contract rate for Medicaid is the same that we get with traditional
yeah.
Medicaid,
yeah.
And if they give us a Medicare, we're getting paid the same rates as we would traditional Medicare. So there's
okay.
No,
oh, good.
So we're not losing.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
If
that's good.
Okay. What's the problem with Molina?
In terms of
payments,
that is the $235,000 question.
I know.
So it seems like they keep coming up with a new excuse or a new reason why they can't pay us. So, you know, at first it was we had the wrong revenue codes that we were putting into the claims. And what we said was, well, how can we know what's the correct revenue codes when the provider manual doesn't provide any information on correct billing for a clean claim? And when our business office calls the claims department, we are told we cannot provide correct claim billing information. That's your responsibility as a provider. And so we forwarded those comments to our provider contact, and he agreed that that's the message that has been disseminated to the providers, and he doesn't agree with it, but that's what has been happening. So we got the corrected revenue codes, we rebuilt it. Late last week we found out that we did not include an authorization code.
Okay.
So that is being taken care of, and the authorization codes is not our responsibility, it's theirs. And so we may potentially be delayed another 30 days, which means will take us into July to get paid. So I just sent out an email to HFS asking for their assistance to start pushing some buttons with Molina to get this taken care of, because this is not a good situation for
us. Are they doing this to other nursing homes?
I don't know.
Can we use that to segue into the
bankruptcy
discussion?
Well, I wonder about their financial stability, but the other thing is they might have a beef with us, and they're trying
no,
to.
No,
I just
That's why I wanted to know if
I don't think it's a beef. I think it's growing pains internally with their organization. Now again, the claims, they're a very big company. All the claims go to Long Beach, California. And at least with Health Alliance, the claims are processed here in town. But we've been paid to date $468,000 for Health Alliance, but we're still owed over $300,000. Now, what we can do as leverage is we can tell the health plans that we will no longer take any new admissions, but that the risk is that we're shooting ourselves in the foot.
Yeah.
Well, and you think you've got it fixed, right? You think you've got it resolved for that?
We think.
Okay.
But it's not fixed yet. We've seen progress. With Molina, we've taken a step backwards. I'm trying to get HFS's help, and they've been helpful before, but we'll have to see if they can get us moving in the right direction. So.
Okay. I know you want to make sure you have time to talk about bad debt, so I might like to ask this to go in the letter. I can see if that's okay.
Bad debt.
Well, before we do that, really quickly, revenue anticipation notes. So I had that in the management update, and I'm not looking for any authorization that we need revenue anticipation notes, but it's just a heads up for all of you that in the event that there is a Medicaid payment slowdown by the state, and again, you know, if the state budget negotiations go through the summer or longer, the likelihood that Medicaid payments will slow down just because of that is very, very real. And so the county won't be able to help us with our cash flow. The option that we had looked at back in 2011 when we were facing the six-month payment delay was revenue anticipation notes, which is basically issuing bonds against a specific source of revenue, which is Medicaid. And we have to put bond documents together and talk with bond counsel about that, and we start shopping it around. That's our only ability to get access to working capital. So what we are starting to do is starting our discussions with the county treasurer and putting together those documents in the event that we would need access to working capital. Now, my crystal ball at this time says, and the people are telling me that the likelihood of a payment slowdown will not occur until the fall. If payments, and because we have just been paid for February by the state, so 2015 covers claims through June. They will take them through August and September before they get caught up on all 2015. After that point, we could see a payment slowdown if budget talks have gone in late into the summer. So right now, I'm thinking maybe by the fall we may need it. So, but the planning needs to start now so that we have everything in place, because we will need to get county.
Did the treasurer give you an idea what he or she thinks the interest rate would probably be?
We haven't got that far yet, but I think the last, when we did in 2011, it was a very, very low interest rate.
Okay.
So, and I can't remember what it was, but it was very low.
Okay.
So we'll just have to wait and see. But we're going to start putting things into place in the event that we need it. Any questions?
Okay.
All right. Page 67 through page 69, you had my summary of the bad debt write-offs that we had for 2014. So if you look at the top of page 68 of the table, you have last year we had estimated that we would write off $209,000 for 2014. We were actually writing off $311,679. The biggest change, or that wasn't even on the radar screen, was that last column, which is Medicaid applications, and that's $88,000 that we know that we have to write off. And what that is, you know, as I talked about before, the biggest problem with the Medicaid application process was getting absolutely no information on the status of an application by the caseworker or the Decatur hub. And then when we finally have gotten information on some of these applications, we find out that those applications have been denied because the families did not submit financial information in a timely fashion. What's problematic is the families have stated that they never received a letter from the case office saying they need to submit additional bank statement or whatever the case is. But we, when we finally, or the families are finally notified, their only option is to file a second application. Medicaid applications by federal law can only go back 90 days. So if someone submitted an application in January of 2014 and they didn't find out to January of 2015 that the original application was denied, they can immediately submit a new application, but it will only go back 90 days. And so if they submitted that in January, they would only get paid going back to October. And then now we're out January through September. And I've had this discussion with the administrators of the Decatur Hub, with HFS, and I even had Leading Age reach out to their contacts at the federal level, at CMS, and it is a federal regulation that Medicaid applications can only go back 90 days, and there can be, nothing can be done, even if it is an issue with the state in the application process. It's a hard number, and I basically would require a change in the federal law to have an application go back, but this is not a new issue nationwide, and we've been told that there's really nothing that can be done.
Why is it new for us?
Because the state changed over the last few years, the number of caseworkers across the state have decreased, which increased the application processing time. And then the state solution was to create a Chicago hub and a Decatur hub. So the Decatur hub is responsible for all nursing home applications south of I-80. And when they put together the hub over a year and a half ago, they started off with 20 new employees, all of which had absolutely zero experience in reviewing Medicaid applications. So they went through significant growing pains. And that's the reason why we could not get any information on applications, because they basically were in a flux, or you want to call it chaos. So as of December of last 2014, they were up to just under 100 caseworkers. But basically what we were told is we have to be patient, because there is a huge learning curve for every group of new caseworkers that come on board. They're empathetic about the issue, and that they agreed that there was a lack of communication with the facilities, because the applications are not the responsibility of the home. They are the responsibility of the residents and or their families. But the caseworkers don't have any regulatory responsibility to notify the facilities of where the applications are, but they understand the negative impact on the facilities. So over the last couple of months, they've been doing a better job of communicating to us on the status of applications and redeterminations, but it doesn't help us with the old applications, which was basically a very big black hole in terms of finding out the status of the applications.
It's a lot of money to write off, I mean, considering the size of the overall operating budget. We're pointing the finger, and it's probably correct, at the state failure to process, and it seems to be money that we can't claw back because of the federal regulation, but the state is being irresponsible, because it really kills some of the Medicaid supporting nursing homes, particularly the public nursing homes that have less opportunity to be selective in their patient base.
So,
and then the state ends up being called upon to try to, you know, send some money to keep the publics alive. It's not logical. Of course, why would I expect that? But
so, moving forward, what we're doing internally is, you know, we added an extra half FTE in the business office. And that half FTE, who right now is working on a full FTE basis, on a full-time basis, is to focus on Medicaid applications and redetermination. So, you know, we're getting better communication on residents who are undergoing redetermination. Redeterminations are every year, every Medicaid recipient has to have their financial status reevaluated every 12 months. The state basically got into trouble with the feds last year because they were not doing redeterminations. They started the process, but they never communicated to the facilities that these residents were undergoing redeterminations. And so
So you miss your 90-day window. Because I would think every public nursing home has a bunch of families who are, you know, in good faith, you know, doing whatever they can, but are not maybe quite as facile about checking on things and following up, so that if you have this extra half FTE, just a friendly call saying, have you heard yet? Did you know the number to call so you could find out the status if it's been rejected? Because we can resubmit in a timely manner if they know. So some families, of course, really don't care or whatever, but I think for the most part, many families just don't have the skill. They never had to deal with a complicated state bureaucracy. And if we could facilitate that interaction at the appropriate time, we can reduce the amount of
that's really your plan with this person.
Yes,
yeah.
And so we're putting we have put together internal procedures to make sure that we identify everyone who's undergoing redeterminations, so that we can work with the families to make sure they get everything submitted. And on the same with the applications, that additional half FTE is going to be working with those families and make sure that they're getting everything submitted in a timely fashion. And again, the state did a good thing by making the application process electronic. So we're encouraging all the families to come in and sit with someone at the business office to submit all the information. Because once it's scanned in, we know that it's been submitted.
That's a good idea right there.
Yeah,
sit down.
Plan, right.
Your people sit down with them one-on-one to make sure it's all
right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And if for some reason they want to do it on their own, we are requesting that we get a copy of everything that they submitted.
A friendly call can often do about 80% of them.
But the heads up for all of you is that we do have certain cases where the families just won't
lift
the finger. And the only thing that we can do is to threaten that to involuntarily discharge that resident. And we have a regulatory right to do that for non-payment. So if they don't submit the application, we will start invoking involuntary discharge, because it's the only leverage that we have to get families who don't want to submit redeterminations
or applications.
Somebody won't
pay the bill and they're not willing to take the steps to have the bill paid and they just want to stay here, you have to do that,
yeah.
Right? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Okay, let's talk because I'm going to be here in a minute. Let's talk about next meeting date and time.
Okay.
So healthcare services group, I'm planning on putting that on the agenda for the next meeting, so I think it would behoove us to have a July meeting so we can get that contract approved.
Which would be July 13th. Yeah, I think so too. Anybody have a concern about that? I think it's important that we do that right now. Okay.
I may not be able to attend, and I definitely cannot attend in August, FYI.
We're going to try to, it'll be a scramble, but I think we should try to schedule it, try our best to keep a quorum so we can get that work done. So you're going somewhere else after this?
I am.
Holy moly. Slow down.
Where are you going? Okay.
I'm going to the gym.
Yeah, so you're going to
Brian's going to the gym too, right? No?
That was a definite no.
Not today.
I run into him now.